I'm wrestling, not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? You are listening to episode 86 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap, Defend What You Have Built, and Dahlemer Mats. And Tommy, I know you're sitting there in beautiful Ohio, and today we have our third Big Ten head coach guest in a row, and Matt Storniello. So welcome, guys, and let's get this started.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, man, for having me on, Ben.
Three Big Ten coaches in a row. We're on a roll.
I was thinking, Tommy, we could go through all 14 before the season.
The only people FRL can get on the damn show is people that host podcasts like you.
I thought you were going to say irrelevant old wrestlers.
That's what I meant. I just didn't want to, you know, go there.
Fair enough.
Isn't that what Big Ten wrestling coaches are?
Ben, I got to give you credit. You delivered an epic thrashing of Willie Saylor in the amateurism debate. You crushed him.
I don't know why he didn't come with more powerful arguments. You know, I think it's one of those ideas of confirmation bias where everyone on that show kind of agrees with his viewpoint, which is why I wanted to come in and actually offer a differing viewpoint. And he's so used to everyone agreeing with him that he doesn't actually have to make any good points.
Yeah, I know. It was very flat-footed, which surprised me because the night before on Twitter, I mean, you said you were bringing heat. You called your shot. You Babe Ruthed him. You know, you pointed to where you're going to hit the ball, and he got smashed.
That's how it went down, dog. All right, well, let's not keep Matt waiting any longer. I know we have a lot of good things to discuss with him. Matt, I'm going to surprise you with a question right off the bat that wasn't. I know we had talked about kind of a list of topics, but how many of your Angry Fish teammates do you still keep in touch with?
How many do I keep in touch with? Well, I talk with Marky McKnight and Jake Herbert pretty regularly. Same very good contact with those two. Obviously, I run into Coleman, Scott on the recruiting trails and at competitions, so it's not hard to keep up with Coleman. But outside of those three guys, Kerry Regner every once in a while, and then the random message here or there with some other guys. But I'd say there are about three or four guys that I stay in pretty decent contact with.
Nice. And has there been any Ray Brinzer sightings lately?
Man, I haven't seen Ray in a couple of years. It's been probably a year or two since I've talked to Ray. But those are always conversations that I look forward to. Nice. I could sit there and talk to Brinzer for days.
Awesome.
Nice. Well,
is he still in the game or is he out?
I haven't seen him.
He was helping out with the open mat.
Open the website
before that. Yeah, the website.
And oh,
before
really?
That, he was coaching up in Wisconsin.
There was a year or so where he was actually the state Wisconsin state team coach. I think he only made it about 1 year though.
Ray is a different kind of animal.
That is for sure.
To say he's unique would be an understatement, but.
Yes, that's also for sure. So, Matt, let's get into, I guess we had a list of topics. While we're talking about unique guys, I got to have him up at my camp this summer, Jason Welch, someone I know you were very close friends with. I believe you coached him for a little bit, and then he was assistant coach to you at Northwestern. You know, he just got the head job at San Francisco State. Obviously, you're probably sad to see him go, but... you know, it's always nice when you're having assistant coaches that are underneath you stepping up into those head coaching roles. I think it says a lot about you. So how are you feeling about that, and how's it been with since he's gone?
Well, that was a bittersweet circumstance for us. Obviously, I've been with Jason for a while now in one capacity or another. I was with him for four of his years of college. He redshirted my first year at Northwestern, and I was with him for his last 3 years, where he was All-American in each of those years, and probably should have been a national champ his senior year. But it's been kind of special for me to transition from one phase to another with Jason, to have him be a collegiate athlete that I coached, then have him graduate and compete on the senior circuit for a little while, and then finally switch over to a coaching capacity this past summer. And Jason was only a coach with us for about 4 months before he got the job. So,
oh really?
I don't want to take all the credit for I don't want to take all the credit for getting him ready to transition.
Oh, shoot.
But
I thought he was coaching
we did it quick.
You.
No, he was a resident athlete for us for the last couple of years.
Okay.
And he helped coach through the club, but he was not on staff with us. He was only with us for a couple of months. But it was important to Jason to get back home. And if he has an opportunity to be the head coach of a program, obviously that's a phenomenal opportunity. And to have that so close to where he grew up, it was something that Jason couldn't turn down. So I'm happy for Jason, happy for his family that he had a way to get back to them. And now he gets to build his own program.
Nice.
So in saying that, let's kind of transition into more coaching. I believe I've read that you brought back Mike McMullen, another PA boy and Northwestern grad. I mean, he's one of my favorite heavyweights to watch in the past 10 years. If not, you know, he's pretty high up there. I mean, what's it like to have a guy like that, four-time All-American? I think he was top three at least three times, if I'm not mistaken.
I think all four. I think, Tommy, I think he actually has, statistically speaking, and I love statistics, so that's why I'm bringing this up, I believe he is the greatest wrestler by statistics to ever win an NCAA title, because I think he went, now Matt's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he went 3-2-3-2, which is a total of 10. No one's ever had lower than that and not won an NCAA title.
I wish I didn't have to correct you, but I do. He went 3-2-3-3, and you are right. He accumulated the most points of any wrestler the past 10 years to not win the NCAA tournament. So not necessarily a list you want to be on, but if you're going to be on it,
pretty damn good.
Why not be at the top of it? And I agree. I mean, obviously the statistics are there. They say that he was the best to not win it, and even if you just go based off of watching Mike compete and looking at some of the guys
right.
that he's beat throughout his collegiate career. He beat Nelson. He beat Quiz a couple of times. He beat all the top guys. But as you guys know, it's not always the best wrestler that wins the NCAA tournament. There are a lot of different things that go into that. And unfortunately, Mike didn't find his way to the top of the podium, but that doesn't take away from the fact that he was one of the best heavyweights.
What brought him back to Chicago? What made him want to come back?
Yeah, because wasn't he a PA boy and he was kind of back by his home, and now he's kind of opposite of Jason, right?
Yeah, pretty much the opposite. So Mike grew up in Eastern Pennsylvania, which is very close to University of Penn. So Mike was there for the last two seasons. He was an assistant coach. He was their top assistant, actually, and getting his master's degree from Penn. And when we had an opening on staff, Mike was the first person I went to try to fill that void that Jason left for us.
So let me get this straight, Matt. He's got an undergrad at Northwestern and an MBA at UPenn, and he's coaching college wrestling?
What's he even doing?
Well, he's got a passion. He's got a passion for wrestling.
He sure does.
You better watch out, Matt. Tommy's going to freaking call him and try to hire him tomorrow. You better hide his number.
I'm going to, you know, reach out to this guy. We need to get him in business.
I'm going to confiscate his phone tomorrow and block your number. But Mike, he's passionate. He's passionate about wrestling. He has unfinished business in the sport. And that's why he wants to keep coaching. It's not the monetary rewards that are drawing Mike to coaching. It's everything else that goes into it. And the connections with the athletes, seeing your hard work come to fruition in their accomplishment. It's stuff like that keeps Mike going. And I honestly don't think there's another program in the country that would have been able to draw Mike away from University of Pennsylvania and being close to his family. But Pennsylvania is Mike's first home, but if he has a second one, it's definitely Evanston. And this is a program that means a lot to Mike. He wants to see us accomplish things that we've never accomplished before, and he wants to be a part of that. And we're extremely fortunate to have him back. He was obviously a phenomenal college wrestler. He's quickly matured into a great young coach. I think he's, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that you'd say is a better assistant coach for upper weight wrestlers than Mike.
And Wait,
I'm not done yet.
All right. Tell me to shut up.
Incredibly smart, forward thinking, and he's going to make a huge impact on the program, both with upper weight recruits and with the upper weights we already have in the program.
Well, I was going to say, Matt, whoever was teaching your heavyweight from last year all them damn tricky moves is the best heavyweight coach in the country. So I don't know. You might be taking some credit for that.
Conan's and Conan's awesome. And that was a fun experience to be a part of for the NCAAs last year with Conan. I don't think anybody in that arena thought he was going to walk out there. And what's that?
Were you teaching him the funk and junk or what?
We worked with him a little bit on it. I worked with him a little bit, but he's got some abilities that you don't see in most heavyweights.
Yeah.
And he knows his way through scrambles. He went out there against Schaefer from Okie State, mm-hmm. who was, that guy was the sixth seed.
Yeah.
And the kid took a shot. He got in our legs. We rolled around for a minute. And as soon as we started rolling around, I knew Conan was coming out on top. He takes the kid down, gets two back points out of it, and then just, kid pretty much laid on his belly for the rest of that period, and it was over. It was over.
Mm-hmm.
He went 12 points to zero against the number 6 and number 11 seed in the NCAA tournament and put himself in the quarterfinals. That was awesome. And now he's got Mike to work with, which is he couldn't be in a better position.
Yeah, he should be making some big gains this year. So I guess we got to bring this up because it is the hot topic with you, and I don't know how much you can say. You can't say, but Northwestern has had both a great recruiting season and an awful recruiting season because I think now you've gotten probably 6 commits from a top high school recruits, but I think now 3 of them have decommitted. So I think you still have 3 good commits. So I don't know. Can you speak on that at all or just maybe leave it?
I can kind of tiptoe around a couple of things here. And it's been – it's been an exciting year of recruiting for Northwestern, and there have been some ups and downs. But I think when this all comes out in the wash, we're gonna have a better and more balanced recruiting class than the one that we originally thought we were gonna have. And it might not be the exact roadmap that we thought we were gonna follow to have our successful recruiting class, but I think we're gonna end up with the right kids. And like you said, we already have a couple of kids still on board. We had a couple of kids that it didn't work out with, but one thing that I would like to comment on is not every recruitment ends on the student athlete's decision. Sometimes that's a decision that has to be made by a staff, or there are other circumstances that go into that where it's not necessarily the prospective student athlete, the recruit's wishes for that to come to an end. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I can't really go into more detail about it, but we've got a huge recruiting weekend coming up this weekend. Actually, it's our homecoming weekend. We have 4 top 50 recruits of the 2018 class coming to campus, and I expect us to have a couple of more commitments here pretty soon.
Nice.
Matt, Ben and I have never asked this to a coach, so, and I didn't expect to ask this, but
uh-oh, I'm nervous. I'm
interested in your answer. Ben and I have, I would say, shared opinion on the whole dynamic of college coaches recruiting athletes at a particularly young age, where the only reason they would ever commit to a school is if they had parental guidance. So you got kids committing as freshmen, sophomores in high school. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much you've done that, and I know even if you could, you couldn't comment on it much, but generally speaking, what do you think of the whole idea that college coaches feel almost like they're in a position where they need to recruit kids very early in the game? Do you think that that's good for wrestling and collegiate coaches, or do you think that that's kind of like something that they're forced or coerced to do because of the nature of competition?
I think it's something that they're kind of forced into doing, like you said, due to the nature of the competition. Yet you have to keep up with your competitors, or at least you feel like you need to. And And it might not be the right approach. We're trying to figure it out for ourselves because we've had a couple of bumps in the road, and we're still learning as we go. But I don't necessarily like it. I think it puts way too much pressure on young high school athletes, and now they're more focused on what school they're going to get an offer from, and if they lose that weekend, is it going to affect that, instead of them just going out there competing and loving the sport. I think you're just asking a lot of kids that aren't necessarily mature enough to grapple with those questions or those life decisions yet. I mean, that's where you go to college is going to set you on the course for the rest of your life. And one thing that we tell our kids when they're looking at Northwestern is this isn't a decision for the next 4 or 5 years of your life. This is a decision for the next 40 or 50 years of your life. This is going to take you to retirement. And no matter how mature of a high school freshman you are at 13, 14 years old, you're not equipped to weigh out all those pros and cons and
sure.
really
smart. You sure are.
Grasp the entirety of what that is.
Yeah, and even if you are mature at that age, you know, we have some that it's just your interests are going to change so much. And then, you know, even if your interests don't change, even if you are super mature, the nature of that team, right? If Northwestern needs a freaking, say you're 133 or 125 gets hurt, right? And you got a freshman committed, you're not going to say, well, we'll get him in 3 years. You're going to recruit over him, right? You're going to get someone in the junior class if you have to, because the guy you had for that spot kind of flaked out. And now that freshman, so I think it's just been this early recruitment phase trend, whatever you want to call it. Everyone does it because they're keeping up with the Joneses. But, I honestly think it's bad for the athletes. I think it's bad for the schools. I think it's bad for everyone all around. And, I don't know that at this point is anyone going to stop besides some type of regulation from the NCAA, which, I don't love them, and I don't love them making more rules. But, man, it's a sticky situation.
It is. And they've actually the NCAA has had some proposals addressing that, where they've talked about maybe making it illegal to put out a scholarship offer to a kid until their junior year, and they're just, it'd be so hard to police because how are you gonna punish a club coach that is middlemanning this, or they're talking about if a kid verbally commits before his junior year that the school's going to be penalized. Well, what if a kid just says he wants to go to the school and commits? Like, you can't penalize that school. They had no contact with them. So it would be a pretty sticky situation. It would be hard for them to police. I don't know what the right way is to go about it, but it's
the more rules you make, the more you kind of enable those who are morally bankrupt, right? Because someone who's trying to follow the rules is probably stay within the lines. And like you said, it's frankly impossible to police, right?
Yeah, and you're talking about recruiting over kids, and I'm not sure if you're referring to just building a relationship with a kid when you say recruitment, or if you're talking about giving offers. But I for sure can speak for Northwestern. If we offered a kid, even if he was a freshman or a sophomore, if we offer a kid, we're going to honor our offer. Now, there are definitely programs out there, and people probably know who some of those programs are, that they don't operate that way. And there are programs out there that, if you don't do as well as they thought you were going to do coming in, that money is not going to be there the next year for you, and that's not supposed to be legal either. But teams do it, and it is what it is. But I can tell you that doesn't happen at Northwestern.
Sure. Okay, Tommy, you got what else you got? Because I got a few more for Matt if you don't got one.
Oh, yeah, shoot away, man.
Shoot away. All right, so I guess what was the I know you went to school there, Matt, at University of Oklahoma, but I got to think that you didn't really have contact with either Cody Brewer or Andrew Howe. I'm imagining the gap was too far. So how did the connection happen that those two ended up coaching for you up in Northwestern, seeing that you guys all went to the University of Oklahoma?
Well, you're spot on with that. There's too big of a gap for me to really have, well, not really for me to have any overlap or contact with Howe and Brewer, other than seeing them compete as athletes. But Andrew was suggested to me from fellow Angry Fish Jake Herbert. I was talking to Jake, trying to figure out what type of staff I wanted to put together, And the first person that Jake said was Andrew Howe. And I'd never talked to Andrew. Obviously, I knew him as a competitor, which he was about as tough as you could get. But dealing with the types of athletes and families that we recruit to Northwestern, it takes a certain type of coach or personality to be able to facilitate that. And the first time I talked to Andrew on the phone, I knew he had it. And from that point, it was just trying to figure out how we were going to close that deal and get Andrew to Evanston. And we were fortunate enough to make it work. And Andrew, he's grown some roots here, so I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. And he's a phenomenal coach. I don't think you could find another young assistant coach out there that is as valuable as Andrew Howe.
So speaking of Howe, it reminded me of who he's working with and helping out. I know this guy, at least for me, Matt, and I apologize, kind of came out of the woodwork. A Deacon, who was, you know, to me, kind of a guy I wasn't really privy to, and goes out there at Junior Worlds, and I believe he got a silver medal. You know, how's he doing? What's the excitement level with him? And is Andrew Howe, you know, kind of shaping him in his own image and likeness? Because I think there's a lot of similarities to me when I watch Deacon wrestle at the Junior Worlds.
Deacon he's a freak. He is a special kind of human being. And the way I met Ryan was just pure lucky, happy coincidence. I was out in Colorado doing a camp with a couple of other Northwestern people. Was this 4 or 5 years ago now? And it was Ryan Deacon's sophomore year of high school. And he was this skinny little 120-pound kid with big ears and giant braces and a big smile on his face, wanted to wrestle. And we wrestled. I was twice his size, so I kicked the snot out of him. But he kept coming back with a smile on his face, chirping, but in a friendly, respectful kind of way. But he just kept coming back for more, kept coming back for more. And then, you know, fast forward 3 years, he's at Northwestern as a red shirt, and the kid just gets better every time he steps on the mat. If you go back to the first opening wrestle, he didn't even place at the Eastern Michigan Open.
Place
at the Eastern Michigan Open.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Then a couple weeks later, places at the Michigan State Open.
So in one kind of his first event of his college, first year in college, he DNPs at the EMU
Open. DNP at the EMU Open.
Basically, his year ends with the world silver medal.
Yeah. Yeah, so that wow. Trajectory, I wouldn't want to climb a mountain if it was on that
right.
On that type of an incline. Oh. But he gets better every time he steps on the mat. He's like a sponge. And Andrew's done a phenomenal job with him. Andrew spent a ton of time with him this summer prepping him for the World Championships.
Did he go to France, or did you, Matt? How?
We both went. We were both out there.
Yeah, gotcha.
We were both out there, which was a great experience. Andrew sat in the corner for Ryan, and he really couldn't have done a better job getting him ready for that competition, from his training regimen to the workouts they went through. I think Andrew gets the bulk of the credit for that, but you can't take anything away from Cody Brewer. He's a phenomenal coach, and it's been really cool to watch Cody kind of grow into that role too this year. Last year, Cody was your stereotypical first year out of college, mostly a workout partner, but doing a great job, phenomenal personality, a ton of energy in the room, and relates to the guys especially well. But this year now, in year two, he's really growing into that coaching role. He's taking on a little bit more of an administrative role in the office. He's incredibly motivated, and he's excited to learn the ropes, and he's taking a more hands-on approach. But I guess we'll jump back to Deacon. But, finishes the year with the world silver medal. Every time the kid steps on the mat, he gets better. He's a sponge. He soaks it all in. And I think the thing that separates him from everybody else is his attitude. There's not a time that he's not enjoying the process. So it's not like work to him. It's fun. He likes the process. He's always enjoying it. And he keeps it simple. I think a lot of kids get in their own way when it comes to competition, and Ryan doesn't do that. He knows what he's good at. He goes out there, he sticks to it, he tries really hard, and he stays positive, and good things are going to happen when that's your recipe.
And he'll be 149, correct? Because he looked big for 66 kilogram.
he's a monster. What everybody doesn't know is that he's half bird and his bones are hollow. So he's going to be at 149. But yeah, he's a big kid. He's going to be a monster at that weight. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch him wrestle. And we've got some other young talent coming into the lineup too. You know, Sebastian Rivera, who they were roommates last year. Those guys were neck and neck. Pretty much every competition that one placed at, the other was right there. And they do a great job. They're incredibly competitive with each other. So they keep each other honest. They keep pushing each other. It'll be fun to see those two young guys step into a lineup. We return three or four national qualifiers from last year and a whole bunch of other starters too. So this should be an exciting year for the program.
So is obviously, I know Rivera and Deacon, any other redshirts that are coming out of the woodwork for this year or no?
For this year, no. I think they're the only two that are going to really step in the lineup and make an impact. But we've got a couple of talented true freshmen coming in or that are in here now. So we'll see if Colin Valdiviez cracks the lineup. Ty Moreland is some tough competition at some of those upper weights, but Ty is a phenomenal wrestler. He might crack a lineup too. You never know.
Cool. Okay. Well, how about one last topic, and then we'll let you go. And I was gonna just bring this up with Tommy after, but I figured you have a good opinion on it. And it's not the amateur debate because that'll take like 4 hours. It's the new scrambling rules, which I got the opportunity. I wanted to talk primarily about that when I went on the FRL Live, but I only got to talk about it for a few minutes. I think, number one, it's going to be a disaster, but number two, it's going to favor the scramblers, and people who made the rule think it's going to deter the scramblers, and I think the opposite is going to happen. What's your take on it? And then we'll get Tommy's take on it.
I think it's terrible. I think it's absolutely asinine, and the stupidest part about it is the 90 degrees, which came out of nowhere. I don't understand what the rationale is for awarding any type of control for holding a guy in a position where he's just as much off his back as he is on it. 90 degrees is neutral. You're not either way. You're not one way or the other. And you just took an arbitrary number, probably because it's in freestyle, and stuck it in a folk-style wrestling match where it has no business. So that's how I feel about it. I don't disagree with you that it's going to favor guys that know what they're doing in those situations. It hasn't been called in matches yet, so you have the explanation of how it's supposed to be, but until you see it, nobody knows for sure how it's going to be called. And so we're trying to simulate those positions in practice, and I was a pretty good scrambler.
You scrambled a little bit.
I think that I would probably have scored a decent amount of points off of this rule. Just the guys that scramble, they know where their bodies are. They understand those positions, and they know how to control people in situations that other people can't typically do that. And so I do think it'll open up some points for those guys from positions that they probably don't deserve points in. And I agree, I think it's going to be a disaster with the referees. It's so subjective, and it's just like the drop-down rule. When they first implemented that, nobody knew how to call it. Eight different refs are calling it eight different ways, and you're not going to have the consistency. And then to go one further, now you eliminate the second official, which is a second set of eyes on the mat, and you go to just video review, which maybe you use that official, maybe you don't. But I'm not a huge fan of some of these rule changes that we just underwent, and we'll sit back and see how it all plays out.
All right, Tommy, let's hear what you got, because I heard you groaning over there.
I just think that, you know, it's speculative as to whether or not it's going to work, but I think the motivation to get rid of, you know, the guys that scramble to a stall, that they use it as a way to hide in the rest matches, this brings them out in the open. So, you know, I agree with the intent. The application, you know, it remains to be seen. I think you guys are kind of, you know, I heard your brother on an interview on the Hammer Camp. I listened to you, Ben.
Max and I did not even talk about that, but I was having the same thoughts in my head, and then I listened to that interview, and it was interesting because we came to the same conclusion separately.
Yeah, I actually think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great because I think that the people that are saying it's bad are the guys that are good scramblers. And it's like, well, you're a good scrambler then, and you're going to be a good scrambler now. So whatever. I don't think you're going to have a further advantage in a scrambling position. I just think that you're going to have the same advantage you've always had because you do it the right way at a high level. But the guys that are nominal scramblers, they don't do it with the intent to score. They don't do it as a methodology to extend wrestling, like David Taylor said on our podcast.
Yeah.
They do it as a method to get out of being attacked and stalemate the position. They have nowhere to hide. So
isn't that the same thing as a guy sprawling on a shot? Except what would you rather watch, a guy just sprawl and stalemate the position, or a guy go into a 30-second scramble and stalemate a position?
I mean, a 30-second scrambler and the stalemate, the position being stalemated, is different than a guy going for the stalemate. So to your point, Matt, if a guy was trying to extend wrestling,
what was that? But that's, Tommy, where I see you just call him for stalling. If all he's trying to do is stall, we just call him for stalling. We already have that rule.
Yeah, they don't do it, Ben. So that's where I'm talking about the application of the rule. Yeah, could it be done even better? Yeah, just call a guy for stalling, but they don't do that. So this gets rid of the skanks.
That's a great word. I haven't heard that one in a while.
I call them scramble skanks. I'm on a group text.
Scramble skanks? That's glorious. I've never heard that before.
I'm on a group text with like 12 Ohio State wrestlers, and mind you, you got Mitch Clark on this. You got Blake Kaplan, Johnny Clark. These guys all, you know, if scrambling didn't exist, they wouldn't have had a whole lot of takedowns. So the debates get pretty heated. And so I'm well-versed on this topic. And, you know, I think the application, to your point, what you guys are afraid of, if that actually becomes reality.
I'm scared.
No, the application of the rule. If what you're afraid of becomes reality, I'm not going to argue that that's bad.
Yeah,
but it's got to happen first. I think the people that hide through scrambling, they hide from actual wrestling by virtue of getting in scrambling positions and stalemating them. They no longer have a place to hide. So I like that. Now, is this rule going to create other problems that we don't have now? Possibly. And if that happens, then I'm with you guys.
You know what? I'm really excited to see just one time. And then after that, I'm like, this is so effing stupid. There's a handful of scrambles where you can get in, where it's kind of a stalemate-ish position, but your back is exposed, right? But if you simply engage your core, you can sit up past 90, right?
Right.
But it's more relaxing to lay back. So I am so like waiting for one match where the ref goes, danger, one, two, and the guy sits up, and then he relaxes. Danger, one, two, and then he sits up, and then he relaxes. Danger, one, two, and it just goes on, and then the ref just says, like, F this. I'm not freaking saying danger, one, two again. That's going to happen at least one time, I promise you guys. Oh, it's going to be so funny.
So, Ben, let's talk about amateurism.
I don't want to talk about amateurism again. How about you and Matt debate?
Okay, so...
Well, you guys might be on the same team, so I don't know.
I just want to reflect on your podcast where you absolutely just, you know, crushed Willie Saylor into a million pieces. But, you know, I primarily agree with you, Ben. I think that, to your point, you texted earlier today, this could be a four-hour debate, which I agree. But I just think, at the very core, it's just very un-American to restrict someone from earnings that they would otherwise have if you didn't have the restriction on them. So, I mean, anybody that disagrees with that, it's like, well, you know, what country are you from? I mean, you might – that's almost like a communist thought. But it gets pretty gray. It's not a black and white situation when you think about revenue sports versus non-revenue sports. Should players get paid based on the revenue their sport is earning for the institution? And then there's the separate – discussion of should players or athletes be compensated based on their own image and likeness, even if their school is making money or not. So it gets pretty gray. And Willie just, you know, the way, you know, he I don't even know what his opinion is, other than, you know, you're wrong, Ben. I mean, that's kind of what he said.
And, kept saying, well, it's just never going to happen. Well, why? It's never going to happen.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So you did a phenomenal job. But, you know, I got to be honest. I have way, way, way more empathy for football and basketball players who are truly, truly restricted from earning money for about a year.
Football is 3 years. They can't go.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are absolutely, truly restricted. To your point, it is collusion at a very highly sophisticated level. But in wrestling, to me, it's a little bit more simple. You know, there's not a single wrestling team out there that does better than break even. Maybe Penn State. Maybe
I would like to see the numbers on a Penn State and see how close they are to breaking even, or if they are making money. I have no idea what the budget on that is.
So the athletes should be happy, honored, and grateful for their scholarship. So they don't need compensation against the revenue the school's earning. But can they or should they make money off of their image and likeness? Should they be able to charge $1,500 a day for a clinic, whatever?
Yes, whatever they want.
And I agree with you, Ben, to an extent. To an extent. The only thing that I'll
like what Matt said, where a booster could pay him $15,000 for one camp.
That's part of it. But the other part is this: these guys are truly not restricted because they signed an agreement and said, I will acquiesce to the stipulations in place by the NCAA, and they could have, on their own free will, not signed that letter of intent and gone and charged $1,500 for a clinic. There's no restriction for them to go do that. So they're choosing to participate in an environment and then complaining about what the environment does or doesn't provide. And to me, even though I do think that they should be allowed to make that money, they signed up for it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what's in there.
And to jump in real quick, Tommy, that value that they have, you know, if somebody is willing to pay them that $15,000 for a clinic, they probably wouldn't have had that value before they had a place to showcase their talents. And that showcase is the NCAA. And in addition to having an opportunity to showcase those talents and potentially go on to earn big money in you know, professional league, they're getting an education along the way. And if the school is doing it the right way, which I'm not saying they all are, but I truly feel like Northwestern is a place where, you know, look at our football program, they do it the right way. Those kids they're leaving with something that's so much more valuable than a little bit of money in a bank account. These kids are going to be able to sustain themselves life after football, basketball, after whatever sport it is. And it's kind of like the old, you know, teach a man to fish, you feed him forever. And that's, if the kids embrace what this is supposed to be about, which is getting an education as you compete on an athletic field to compensate you for, you know, help pay for that cost, then
I see that. I mean, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth, but you know, I guess I see that, but I'm in the Ben Askren camp where it's like, you know, the time is now. To an extent, so it's like,
yeah, I mean, like, and think about the one, what's the one damn ESPN 60 documentary where the guy was a freaking animal, and then he blew out his knee, and he never played football again, ever, right? And then, you know, that's one story, but I'm sure that's happened time after time, and so, you know, especially when we're talking about football or basketball, an earnings window is 10 years, and that's a long earnings window, right? And so, you know, when you're having these restrictions on, oh, they can't go to the NFL or NBA for a certain set of time, you're really limiting that specific window that they have to earn the money. And, you know,
it's so much more black and white for football and basketball, man.
Yeah.
I
think we should almost have a different conversation for football and basketball and then, you know, than the rest of the sports.
You take Kyle Snyder, for example. He's the greatest example because we know intuitively Kyle Snyder – has passed up hundreds of thousands of dollars minimum by wrestling in college the past couple years. And as bad as I truly do feel for Kyle, I truly feel bad for him. He is not technically restricted. He is choosing to be restricted.
Which is why I thought he wouldn't go back.
Right, but he's not restricted. he could, at any given moment, he could say, I'm done with this, start paying me, and he'll get paid.
I mean, it's a decision he shouldn't have to make, though, but I see your point.
Well, that's where I agree with you, Ben. That's where I agree. It's like, why make it so hard on him? Why can't we just kind of tweak things up a little bit?
Yeah, I want to jump in real quick with something you talked about a few minutes ago, Ben, and you're saying, you know, there's a window for how long they're going to be able to really make that money off of their athletic ability. And I cannot argue that with that at all, but it's still a window, and that window is going to come to a close. Look at how many NFL players make tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars, and then 10 years later, those guys are bankrupt.
Well, their spending habits are nothing.
Now, how much of that could have been prevented if these kids were educated properly and they learned about managing their money, or they learned about economics?
You have a very fatherly opinion on this matter.
Yeah, he does. But Matt, I went to Oklahoma. Tommy went to Ohio State, which are significantly more larger institutions. And I don't want to throw my institution under the bus that I went to, but every freaking basketball and football player had someone attending class with them, whether it was a mentor or tutor. And I don't know what they were doing over there, but my best guess is they weren't doing all their own work, right? And how many of the schools have gotten in trouble for those type of scandals? I mean,
and they should. But that's just because somebody is not doing it right doesn't mean you abandon the system.
But
you
know, is that really the system that's broken, or
you need to fix? You know, fix some problems within it.
I mean, it's such a huge problem. What percentage? Let's have a fun game here. What percentage of Division I football and basketball players do 100% of their own homework?
I guess that number's small. I didn't hang out with enough football and basketball players
really?
To answer that question. No.
I guess I didn't challenge myself in school, so I ended up in a lot of...
What does your gut tell you? I mean,
small. What's your gut tell you, Tommy?
Small.
It's small. The number's small.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's that whole charade too. I mean, yeah, and that's where I think if there was no restrict, I would have less of a problem with the payment in basketball and football if they could right out of high school go to the next level. And, you know, I know in basketball, obviously those guys have played at the next level right away at age 18. In football, they say, hey, they're not ready. But what you're going to have is you're going to have the same issue as as college wrestling has right now with recruiting guys that are young. Because when you see Kyle Snyder and he's a freshman and you can't have him for 3 years, that doesn't mean you don't know he's going to be freaking amazing, right? When you see Gable Stevenson, you know he's going to be great. And so when you're watching these kids come out of high school, you're still going to have to pay them because you know they're the next generation, right? And maybe you keep them in some kind of developmental or training program, you don't throw them to the wolves right away. But they're still would be making money. You know, the best ones would.
Yeah. You know, it's not as compelling of an argument when to pay the players when you can honestly say they do have the option to not participate at the NCAA level and make a living in America doing the same thing. And that is where wrestlers have a less compelling discussion than football or basketball, because it's like, hey, if you don't want to go represent a college and play by those rules, you can go run your own damn clinics. And so they're not indentured in a sense, Ben. Now, do I wish...
Are you using the title of the book that I told them they should read yesterday?
No, but indentured... Indentured is to be like almost like bound by something without having a choice in the matter, and at least that's what I think indentured means.
Well,
and
I will Google that for you.
At the end of the day, these dudes do have a choice in the matter. They do
We're talking about non-revenue.
Yes, they have a choice in the matter. They do have the option to not wrestle in college and do an Aaron Pico and go make a living. And they're choosing to play by those rules. They're signing a contract that says, I will play by the rules. Now, I think that there's ways around it where it can be a win-win. And that's where I agree with you, Ben. But I don't like to just jump on the bandwagon and say, yeah, you know, these guys should be able to do clinics for all the money in the world. It's like, well, yeah, they should, but they could if they wanted to. If they truly wanted to, they could right now.
Sure. Yeah, and for non-revenue, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, and then for revenue, I mean, that is actually black and white. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, Matt, to your point, Matt, I mean, yeah, in theory.
Let's just take colleges. Matt, I got an idea. Maybe you can do this. We could totally separate, create a separation of athletic department and educational institution in which the athletic department will pay athletes, and then athletes could go take that money and then pay for their education if they want to. What do you think? But they're separate.
I think you're going to bankrupt a lot of athletic departments. You're not going to have enough to really have an NCAA. I think you're going to powerhouse schools are going to have the means to be competitive, and the other ones aren't. And now what you're going to have is limited opportunities for all these different kids across America to get an education, or to even have a platform, or have a platform to show their athletic talents to get to the next level. So I don't think that would be you would increase opportunity for a select few, but you're going to limit opportunity for so many more.
But people, if it was a free market, wouldn't people just pay enough so they didn't go bankrupt? I mean, if you don't got it, you don't pay it. And to imagine that the playing field is level right now, I mean, that there's no way that's true in Alabama.
That's what I'm saying. The haves are still going to be the haves, and the have-nots are still going to be the have-nots.
And really, the haves are paying these dudes under the table.
Listen,
came out. It was in the news.
The Power Five literally does not know what to do with their money. Dabo Swinney at Clemson. Did you see his practice facility? He's got sand volleyball courts. It's like
in his backyard.
I mean, how egregious is that? It's like, what do you want to do, Dabo? It's like, let's make a putt-putt course. I'm being serious. Let's make a putt-putt and let's do some sand volleyballs because you already pay me $6 million. We have too much money. We don't know what to do with it. Let's just, you know, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with the cash.
Yeah, I agree. Well, damn it all, I didn't want to talk about freaking economics of amateurism. I mean, you guys drew me into that conversation. Matt, you got anything else you want to close with?
No. I think you guys about hit it all. You know, we have a couple of other things that we're developing here at Northwestern. If I get into them in detail, we could be here all day. But we have a mentorship program of our own that we're kicking off to help develop our athletes in a professional sense. Since, you know, coaches, obviously, we handle the athletic side of things, but we've created programs at Northwestern that are helping to make these kids more marketable when their athletic careers come to an end, which I think that's.
And, you know, I would think that in the city of Chicago, at an institution like Northwestern, that this mentorship program is going to be, you know, the cat's meow.
It's lights out. It's lights out. And this is something that I will give our football program credit. They have had a mentor program for a number of years now. And we pretty much we bit right off of theirs and kind of stole their program, got a. The mentors that we had that volunteered are insanely accomplished in their fields. And if I were a high school kid and I was looking past just a collegiate wrestling career, but if I wanted to go to a place that I could have it all, compete in the Big Ten, get one of the best educations in the U.S., and more or less you do things right, you're set for life with this degree and with the connections that you'd develop here at Northwestern. So I think it's an easy decision. If I were a high school kid and I had the grades to get into Northwestern with this staff, with the programs that we have in place, it'd be kind of foolish not to take that opportunity.
What do you think is better, putt-putt golf courses and sand volleyball courts or the Northwestern mentorship program? What's better for your future, Ben?
Well, I'm just coaching wrestling for the rest of my life, so I'll go putt-putt and volleyball.
Tommy, what would you go with?
You know, Matt, we know what I'm going with. I'm going with the mentorship program, man. I think that
Tommy's,
you know,
not very good at putt-putt. That's what he doesn't want to tell you.
Yeah, I'm a dad. I like, you know, setting the groundwork for the future. you know, being able to be around, be in a big city with a bunch of graduates that went down the road I'm going down in college, use them as a springboard to help me understand what my future might hold. I mean, that stuff's invaluable. So is this in full force this year, or is it like, you know, something that you're planning to do?
No, we're in full force this year. This is the first year that we've implemented the program. Every single one of our 21 athletes is paired up with the mentor. And obviously for the guys that are a little bit older, this is an expedited process for them because mentors didn't have a chance to start with them in year one. But for our freshmen that came in this year, they will be with this mentor for the next 4 or 5 years. And we have a plan in place for each year, you know, what they're going to do and what that year is going to look like. And it should all take care of itself. It's between NU for Life, which is our program in the athletic department that is devoted to doing this, and now this added program that they're helping us implement. It's something, you know, really special.
You know, the development.
And if you do it right, you can make enough money when you're older to buy as many putts or build as many sand volleyball courses as you want. So you don't necessarily have to choose. You can have it all.
What if they built a disc golf course, Tommy? Then it's over. Then I'm in.
Would you rather have a disc golf course or a mentor in college, Ben?
Disc golf. I was on a disc golf course and they didn't even have one. I went and found it.
Would you if it was in the summertime, would you walk around the disc golf course in your bare feet?
So Tommy, you want to know a great story? My senior year, I was playing disc golf barefoot. I always played barefoot, but it was in December, but Missouri is still pretty warm in December. And I can tell you many of these type of stories. But I lost track of time, and I was almost late to the weigh-in against the University of Pittsburgh. I got back. I shot an amazing round, on hole 16. I'm like, damn it, I'm almost late. But wait, I'm shooting a great round, so I got to finish. And I made it with a few minutes left to weigh-ins, and then I ended up getting the pin against Keith Gavin that night. So that was a fantastic day. But I used to, traditionally on road trips, I would sneak out the back door. I'd call a cab, and I'd get a cab to take me to the disc golf course before Coach Smith knew where I went.
And before Uber.
And before Uber didn't exist either. Yep, so I played all the Big Ten, Big 12 schools. I played all their disc golf courses, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Nebraska. I played in Vegas one time. I played at the CKLV. And I didn't realize how expensive the cab was going to be. And so I took the cab there. I played Paradise Park. And I was 5 miles away and I had no money. So I had to run 5 miles back to the hotel. Oh, idiot.
Were you wrestling at the CKLV?
Yeah, I was wrestling. I pinned everyone.
Oh, my God.
Coach Smith would get so mad at me.
Oh, I bet he did.
All right. That's it. That's all we got. That was a fun episode. Matt, always great to have you on. Hey, you got a Twitter handle. Where should people reach out to you? Facebook, Twitter, what?
Yeah, let's go with Twitter. So Coach Matt and you.
Coach Matt and you.
My Twitter handle. Nice. At Coach Matt and you.
All right, Tommy, that was a fun show. Tommy, let's just keep rolling with this Big Ten coach thing. So we got to get another one for next week.
You gotta get brands. I'm putting brands. You're in charge of getting brands.
Oh my gosh, I don't know how that's gonna go down, Tommy. I think you might have to reach out to him.
All right, you got Barry Davis then.
I'll go egg him. All right, you guys have a great night. I will talk to you next week, Tommy. Matt, I'll see you later.
See you, brother.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. It was awesome. I appreciate you having me on.
You are listening to the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.